meditation and remembrance. But today we're reading, we're going to chant first, I suppose, in Endicott House. It's a bit late, so we'll keep it short. Purports are coming up. Thank you. Pardon? Pardon? What do you? Doesn't worry me.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam divayat nishtapayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttamashloke bhakti bhavati naishtike.
Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 54, text number 20 what? 21. The first verse, there's no purport to this verse. We will read a few verses in this section.
Iti
Bhukva
Vatam
Aruya
Sarating
Praha
Satvaraha
Jodiyashvan
Yataha
Krishnaha
Tasya
Me
Sangyugam
Vavet
Ityukvaratam
Aruya
Sarating Praha Satvaraha
Sarating Praha Satvaraha
Jodayashvanyata Krishna
Jodayashvanyata Krishna
Tasya me sangyugam bhavet
Tasya me sangyugam bhavet
Ityukvaratam
aruyo Ityukvaratam aruyo
Sarating prahasatvaraha
Sarating prahasatvaraha
Jodayashvanyata Krishna
Jodayashvanyata Krishna
Tasya me sangyugam bhavet
Tasya me sangyugam bhavet
Ityuktva
Speaking
Ratam
On his chariot
We have a Ratha Yatra Festival of the Chariots Rath Ratam Ratam on his chariot
Aruya.
Aruya.
Aruya, climbing. But also there, even though one goes up or reaches the Brahmajyoti, without taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, one has to fall down here. There's no shelter save and except the lotus feet of Krishna, whether we're in under the influence of the material energy or whether we're released from the influence of the material energy. Without the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, there is no real shelter at all. Being without material shelter does not mean that one has real shelter. So we're trying to develop real shelter. Praha
said
Satvaraha
quickly
Jodaya
drive.
I think I missed a word out there, didn't I?
Yes,
Saratim
to his driver.
Jump forward a little bit. Asvan.
The
horses.
Yataha.
To where?
Krishna.
Krishna.
Tasya.
His.
May.
With me.
Samyugam.
Fight.
Bhavet
must be. Translation, no purport.
Having said this,
I'm just looking at the lay of the words. Having said this, he had mounted his chariot and told his charioteer, Drive the horses quickly to where Krishna is. He and I must fight. See how Krishna conscious he was. Quickly drive my chariot to where Krishna is. Would we say that? Maybe. But he meant it. He really meant it. He really wanted to go where Krishna was. This is a form of Krishna consciousness. Maybe, I don't know exactly which indirect rasa, maybe Vira, or Shivaras. But he has this attraction towards Krishna. He and I must fight. As we all know, Krishna likes to fight. To show his might in the day and night, to prove what is right. So he likes to have a fight. So he chooses his combatants. Somehow or another, Krishna has chosen Rukmi, but he's not a particularly, maybe not the best of combatants. But anyway, he still, nonetheless, he had his good fortune. He had this, maybe for the wrong reasons, he was attracted towards Krishna and he wanted to fight with Krishna. So we'll, what we'll do, there's some purports here, two purports in these next verses. I'm going to read something from yesterday, not from yesterday, but relevant to yesterday, a little bit. Some of the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti, which are also very short in this section of Bhagavat. But there are one or two which are interesting. Remember yesterday, Rukmihi said that if I don't retrieve my sister and finish off as Krishna, I will not return to my capital city of Kundina. So he went out with this intention. He never did come back. But the words which he said, I will not enter Kundina without killing Krishna and bringing back Rukmini. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that Bharati, another name of goddess Saraswati, gives the following meaning of Rukmini's words. Actually, the words meant, I will not enter Kundina because I do not understand Krishna. The words can be used as adatva agyatva, do not understand him. Therefore I will not try to stop him, nor will I try to free Rukmini. The word play on Sanskrit words have so many different angles of meanings. Even in English we find that words sometimes have multiple meanings, even sentences sometimes. For instance, you take a word like right. What does right mean? What does it mean? Pardon? What do you say it means?
Not left.
Not left. What else? What do you say it means?
Correct.
Correct. That's correct. It's not left. What do you think it means? To write like this, right? So if you just say the word write, you may not know what really is the meaning. But to speak of Sanskrit, which is so much deeper language, and even in sentence composition, if you're not familiar with the language, you make the completely wrong meaning, sometimes even out of sentences in different languages. So Sanskrit similarly, there are so many different, according to the context, according to the way that the words are combined and the tense and so many different things, the meaning can be completely different. So Goddess Saraswati, of course, she is expert in all languages and the usage of all languages. She is always making everything Krishna conscious. In a similar way, we can learn a lesson here that how we can transform, as we were saying everything yesterday, we can see everything in relation with Krishna. Even that which is adversary, an adversary becomes a friend in Krishna consciousness, or something which is, we would normally say, is detrimental, becomes actually very favorable or valuable in our Krishna consciousness, a source of our remembering Krishna. Yesterday we were also talking about certain topics. One of them, I believe, was lust. And I was just thinking this morning, a very interesting topic which we're supposed to discuss today at noon. It's called Obstacles on the Path of Devotional Service. Now, most of you probably won't be there for the noon program. So it just occurred to me as we're just discussing, focusing our attention upon Krishna. So I was just thinking, obstacles of things. I saw this sign one time. Yesterday we saw the sign about the rat. last night or Lent morning, I can't remember, but we saw a sign about a rat, that even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. So similarly, we saw another sign in a subway in London one time. Many, this is over 25, 30, maybe 30 years ago, it still sticks in my mind. Some things stick in our mind. Unfortunately, most of the things that stick in our mind, we wish they would not stick in our mind. We wish they would get lost. But unfortunately, they do tend to stick in our minds. But this one was maybe useful. And it was a big poster on the wall in the underground subway station there in London. And it said, obstacles are things that you see when you lose sight of the goal. It had a big picture of the ocean, with the sun rising over the ocean. Sunrise. And it was rising right between these arch. We have a lot of these off the South Victoria coast, of like we call crags or things sticking out with the Seven Sisters. What do you call it? Seven Sisters or what? Pardon? 12 Apostles. Not seven. The Seven Sisters is in London. The 12 Apostles are over here. There are things sticking out in the ocean. Is that right? Rocks? So maybe some of them are arched and some of them are not. But the sun was rising between one of the arched ones. And you could just see the sun in the middle and all around with these dangerous looking rocks. Which if you were on a boat, for instance, you'd get easily shipwrecked if you hit the rock. But if you keep your eye on the sun, you'll be safe. This is a very nice example for devotees aspiring to become Krishna conscious. Despite all the impediments and obstacles and the various samskaras, everybody was asking yesterday also about this, despite the fact we have this knowledge, still we tend to go in the direction we know which is not favorable sometimes. So, because we have these deep, what they call samskaras, because we've taken so many pictures in the past in this material world, our eyes and nose and ears and tongue, touch and all these things, they're like cameras taking pictures. They take little impressions, which are called vrittis. Little impressions which build up, just like, I don't know much about computer science, but I think there's little kind of little bytes or something, little things which add up to a picture, you know, overall, what looks like a picture or a full impression. So these little bytes, these little pictures add up to an impression in our consciousness. Some of them we're unconscious of them, but they affect our behavior, they affect our reaction to things, and so on, even though we're not consciously aware of their presence. They form a particular behavioral pattern in our lives, which is called samskaras, or impressions on our consciousness, which cause us to relate to things in such and such a way. And most people are bound up by that. It's actually, you can say, impressions of karma, in one sense. So through our eyes, nose, ears, tongue, senses, all the senses, we are capturing or we are taking these various pictures of the material world in various forms. Not just by sight, but by hearing, by tasting, and so many ways, smelling. And this way we get our impressions developing accordingly. So some people are born with certain fears or impressions about certain things because they only have these what are called samskaras, or these impressions from a previous lifetime, or in this lifetime. I know one time I was in Auckland, we were at one program, and the lamp came round, the ghee lamp, and this young boy, maybe not very old, he ran away when he saw the lamp. He wouldn't go near the lamp. So I talked to his parents afterwards, and they explained to me when he was a baby, he pulled the tablecloth, and there was a candle on there. The candle fell down, he caught on fire. So he's terrified of fire. Very deep impression in his life. He's got this picture of fire. I had the similar thing. When I was a child, I don't even know what age, because I can't even remember it. I always wonder when I was a kid, I don't have the problem much now, but when I was a kid, I was always really scared of going underwater. Anyone have that problem? You know, as soon as I felt like I was dead. I was going to die as soon as I went under the water. I was terrified. I couldn't dive. I couldn't jump into the water. I had to do it. It was the most terrifying thing of the week for me. The teachers forced me to jump in the water if I couldn't dive at school. We had to go to swimming lessons. It was terrifying. I would come up, struggling for my life. You know, I was like feeling like I would just survive by the skin of my teeth. I was feeling so terrified as a young boy. And then later on, my father explained to me that when I was 1 or 2 years old, I almost drowned under the ocean, and he just picked me out just at the last moment. Somehow, I was swallowed in a wave somewhere in the ocean. This happens to kids sometimes. These impressions forms an impression. And a reaction of that impression as we relate to certain circumstances in such and such a way. So we've all got these deep impressions in our hearts, which they don't go away so quickly. Lord Nityananda, he is very kindly, he is also, they're like channels, they're like deep channels in our consciousness, very deep channels. Now again, when things, certainly, especially when we start to clean our heart, these channels come very clear. It's like television channels or something. They come on, they turn on. We were referring to the other kind of channel, like a canal or something. Nityananda has brought a canal from the spiritual world. He's brought another channel, which is the Sankirtan channel. And he's freely distributing the ingredients of that channel in the form of Krishna Prema or Sankirtan Prema to one and all. So we can actually immerse ourselves in that channel. And by immersing ourselves in that channel, we will not be so disturbed by the other channels, which are also trying to compete for time, just like different channels on the TV are always competing to get the audience. They're all competing to get our attention, you could say, using it as an analogy. So if we take shelter of Lord Nityananda, take shelter of the spiritual master, then we may not be so disturbed. But even though these other channels are there, due to our past contacts in this world, it's like a similar example is given. Sometimes, well, I don't know if others, I kind of made it up. But it's like a photographer. He takes pictures. And all those pictures, nowadays they have digital cameras, maybe a little different. But previously, there was no digital camera. They had different types of cameras, which took the picture, and it was recorded on a negative film, on a reel of film, called a negative. So all those pictures are stored on a negative. They're unseen to us. They don't mean anything. Even a negative, even when you take it out of the camera, it doesn't really mean anything out of itself. It doesn't give any picture. It's just dull and seemingly lifeless, practically. But under certain circumstances, that negative becomes positive. And then you can even get a film. And the whole film becomes almost alive. Or you get still pictures, which also have, paint a picture, and positive. And we're very attractive. We don't want the negative. If you go to your photographer and he says, what do you want? You say, I want you to make lots of negatives. You're not, generally speaking, you want positive. You want the picture. You don't want the thing behind it. There's a thing behind it which causes the picture. The picture doesn't come otherwise. If you haven't taken that picture on the negative, it will not come onto the positive. We can't think of anything unless we've come in contact with it before. All the thoughts, they may be a jumble, but they're all based on previous impressions or previous contacts through our senses with the material world. So those are developed under certain circumstances. They come to the surface under certain circumstances and they show their face to us. Here I am, little baby, when you see it. Oh, my little darling baby. Oh, you see the picture of the baby. You see the picture of something else, something you're very attached to, and your heart starts going that direction. Starts fluttering and you start going in that direction by seeing a picture of a previous recording. So it's like that, contemplating the object of the senses, we become attached and so on and so forth by churning over. One who churns over in his mind all these previous impressions, well, certainly they'll fall down, generally speaking. It's not just like that, there's more to it, but it's one of the causes of fall down. So. The thoughts will come. They'll certainly come to the surface. Just like, how many of you make ghee out of butter? Anybody use butter to make ghee? Some of our Indian devotees, some of the devotees here also. Nowadays, ghee is quite cheap, at least in Australia it's quite cheap. Isn't it? Ghee is not difficult to come by. In England, when I first came in contact with it, I'd never heard of ghee. We never, unheard of substance in England in those days. If there was any, it would be in some Indian store or something, it would cost a fortune. We never heard of it. So even in the temple, we never actually got, we never purchased ghee. Maybe somebody gave a donation now and again, I don't know. But we would always have to make our own ghee out of butter. How many of you have made ghee out of butter? Quite a few of you. So you know what the process is? How do you make ghee out of butter? You boil the butter for a long time.
And then
automatically it becomes ghee. You take the butter. There's nothing else to it. It's all by chance. There's no reason behind it whatsoever. It automatically becomes ghee. Is there anything else? That's true, to a certain extent. Is there anything else involved?
A crud that sticks to the bottom.
Yeah, there's a crud that sticks to the bottom. And what do you do with a crud? Pardon? Do you stir it? The crud? Possibly the crud can be used too. Do you stir the crud?
I don't mean to stir it.
No, you just leave the crud where it is. Don't disturb it. And what else happens? The crud on the bottom. Is there anything else that happens? Maybe they've changed, the process has changed. The butter is different nowadays, I don't know. What else happens? It comes to the top. Tons of stuff comes to the top. It's separated. The solids are separated from the ghee. And it comes to the surface. And what do you do?
You skim it off.
And then you're left with pure ghee. I don't know what happens if you don't skim it off. It may have some detrimental effect. I was just told we always have to skim it off the top. You're skimming. So these dirt, you can't see it. The butter looks nice and clean, pure. But then when you start boiling the butter, then what do you get? You get all this crud on the bottom and stuff coming to the top. And you have to constantly be scooping it off. And don't disturb those stuff on the bottom, generally speaking. I don't know, maybe you can. But we never did. We just left it. It didn't disturb the process. Just kind of stuck to the bottom of the pan sort of thing. So in a sort of a way, we can use this as an example. When we're boiling, when devotional service is like, it's like turning up the heat. It's like boiling the milk or something, you know. It gradually becomes more and more condensed. But in the process, you may get all these different... They're churning the ocean. When they churn the ocean of nectar, they got a lot of poison too. A lot of dirty things come up. So as we're purifying our hearts, probably this example of cleaning a floor, all kinds of dirty things will come up. You never even knew they were there. If you really get down to it, you've got to take the carpet off the floor. Don't just vacuum the carpet. You've got to take the carpet off the floor. Carpets are not the cleanest things on earth. Practical, no doubt. But really you have to get underneath everything. Sometimes devotees, they just clean, or people just clean around things. That doesn't really remove the dirt. So similarly in Krishna consciousness, this process is a cleansing process. So naturally, some of the crud will come out. If it's there, or if there's crud in the butter, depending on how much impure the butter is, more crud will come. You may not be left with much ghee at all if it's very, very impure. So, like that, our hearts, we're cleansing, but the process of chanting Hare Krishna is like boiling the butter, and all the crud is coming out. And, oh my God, since I started chanting Hare Krishna, look at all this crud. I never had these problems before. I wasn't aware of them before, maybe, but they were there in an unmanifested form. And now they're showing their face because you're trying to get rid of them. It's like you have someone sticking out, hanging out in your house. They don't cause any problem, but you try to get rid of them, then they kick up a right fuss. A right fuss. Even insects or even humans sometimes. They kick up a right fuss. But you leave them alone, they don't disturb you. So some ones on the bottom, some you have to leave alone. You just have to carry on chanting and hearing. Don't unnecessary stir those which are not necessary, but a lot of them you have to get rid of. You have to just give up. Like that. So this process of devotional service depends on association. The purification process depends on association. And just like the example we were discussing earlier about the photography and how the negative becomes a positive under certain circumstances. How does it become a positive? The potential to be a positive is there on the film, but nothing happens unless you do what? What do you have to do? Those who can still remember ancient history when there were non-digital cameras, I don't know if they're still available on the market. I've still got one, but I haven't used it for years. Pardon? What do you do? What's the process of converting a negative into a positive?
Developing.
Everything has to develop. It takes time, but you have to develop it. Or you can lose this positively, negatively. Krishna consciousness takes time to develop. It develops under certain circumstances also. What is the process of development? Yes? Certain chemicals are there, and? Butter? No, in the dark room. As you say, the dark room. Of course, the whole process has changed, no doubt, with modern technology. But previously, you had to be in a dark place, and then certain chemicals mixed in, and then the thing happens. I don't know if there's more to it than that, but suddenly it produces some kind of positive picture of the what you took, the film. So in a similar way, if you develop that camera, develop that film in the light, what will happen? Everything disappears. It just, what they call it, washed. Film washed. There's nothing left. You can't see anything. Sometimes that happens, right? Or maybe, you made a mistake when you took the film out of the camera, or, when you were taking the picture, the back wasn't properly closed or something. There's nothing there. Sometimes you're really disappointed. You take your film into the shop and there's nothing there. You pay them $10 or something, you've got nothing, just a piece of blank negative and no picture at all. As it was exposed to light. So similarly, tamasi mam yatiya gamaha, if we come out of the darkness, tamasi mam jyoti, come into the light, then all these impressions can be wiped out. You won't get a positive from it. We have to keep in the light. As long as we stay in the light of Krishna consciousness, then the negatives will not develop. There will be no development. They won't develop. The secret, Krishna Surya Samaya Haya Andhakar, that Krishna is like the sun, and as long as we stay in the presence of the sun, there cannot be any darkness. In the presence of Krishna, there cannot be any Maya. This is the foundation thing. Then the chemicals are there too. Chemicals, I never thought of analyzing them. But maybe we can say it's like associational environmental situations. Under certain environmental situations, then they will develop. Contacting the objects of the senses and so on and so forth. Or just the type of lifestyle we lead. So on the positive side, the chemicals are like the sadhana, the practice of sadhana, various activities which are favorable for us to remember Krishna. Or to, like in your homes, most of you are practicing Krishna consciousness. You probably got some little altar, some pictures. Maybe you play music whilst you're, doing things. Different environmental circumstances, you try to make the house as favorable as possible to the development of Krishna consciousness, to help you to remember Krishna. These are just some little examples which we can utilize in our lives to understand the simple process, and sometimes in of themselves, of course, we can say they're nothing really, but they give us the strength. They give us a focus to work towards, to relate to these things, because they're things in our daily lives. We don't want to end up necessarily like Rukmini, whose attraction towards Krishna was one of, I want to kill him, or I want to, whatever it is, get back my so-called property. Krishna has stolen my property. I'm going to kill Krishna and get it back. This is the opposite. Devotee sees that we've stolen Krishna's property. Our business is to return it to Krishna. Whereas a non-devotee is thinking the opposite way. This is mine. And this Krishna has taken it away from me. It's a demonic mentality. So Rukmini had the wrong idea, but at least he was Krishna conscious. He was conscious of Krishna. We'll read a little bit more. One or two more verses here, and then we'll finish.
Aryahang nishitaya banai gopalasya sudurmatahi neshe viryamadangina svasane prasapang hita.
This wicked-minded coward boy. Rukmini is praising Krishna. He's calling him a wicked-minded coward boy. Infatuated with his prowess, has violently abducted my sister. But today I will remove his pride with my sharp arrows. Rukmi Uvacha. Shri Rukmi Uvacha. All glories to Rukmi. Well spoken. Today I will remove his pride with my sharp arrows. We can turn all this back to front and you get, you know, it's really to be applied to us. Our pride will be removed by the sharp arrows. The Lord's sharp banner, his sharp arrows can remove our pride. Sharp arrows of his mercy in various forms. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami, one of the famous commentators on, not the recent godbrother of our Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, but previous commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of his famous ones, Srila Sridhar Swami, who Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted as being the primary commentator on the Bhagavatam. He's the Swami. The one who doesn't set the Swami, he uses it. Argument against Balabhabhata one time. Balabhabhata was a famous personality. Now he has his own practice, his own Balabha Sampradaya, famous in Gujarat. Some of you are from Gujarat? Who's from the Gujarat? You've heard of Balabhacharya? Balabha Sampradaya? The Balabha Sampradaya? Very famous Sampradaya. Millions of people in Gujarat worship Bal Krishna, especially Balabha Sampradaya. They worship Bal Krishna. And you see them every year in the Vrindavan party time. Very great devotees. But they have a slightly different mood. So he'd written his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam also, Balabhacharya. And he wanted to present it to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu wasn't interested to hear it. And then Balabhacharya became a little upset and he started to say, well, Sridhar Swami has commented, but he said this and that, but actually I see it from a different point of view. And Lord Chaitanya got very upset. He said, if one doesn't accept the Swami, which means husband, literally speaking, if the wife doesn't accept the husband, then she becomes unchaste, you know, like a prostitute or something. So similarly, he said, if you don't accept the commentary of Sridhar Swami, I don't want anything to do with you. So he got very, very upset and very... Anyway, it's a long story. So Lord Chaitanya, he accepted Sridhar Swami's commentary as the primary commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. We have Vishwanath Chakravarti also. Both of them are very prominent. Vishwanath Chakravarti had not appeared. He appeared after Mahaprabhu. Sridhar Swami appeared before Mahaprabhu. So there was no commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur at that time of Mahaprabhu. So there was nothing to comment on because it had not yet been compiled. More prominent to us is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur because he's actually in our line of disciplic succession directly. And also he's more recent. So generally the commentaries of the more recent acharyas, just like our Prabhupada's commentary, is more important, but we place more emphasis upon it than the previous commentaries. This is how it usually works. But anyway, she is quoted here. Sridhar Swami explains that Gopalasya actually means of the protector of the Vedas. Well, Dharmate means of him whose beautiful mind is compassionate even toward the wicked. So he's playing on words again. Whereas he is saying, the wicked-minded cowherd boy, uses this word, Gopalasya, of course, of a cowherd, and which words he used for wicked here, I don't know. Sudurmate. So the two words here are translated differently. This word, Gopalasya, also means the protector of the Vedas. Of him whose beautiful mind is compassion even toward the wicked. Instead of the wicked-minded coward boy, it becomes one who has a very beautiful mind. He who is the protector of the Vedas and has a beautiful mind and is even compassionate towards the wicked. So he gives a completely different meaning of the words of Rukmi, to praise Krishna instead of trying to defame him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds that the real meaning of what Rukmi said is that today, fighting with Lord Krishna, Rukmi would relieve himself of his pretensions of being a great hero. So Krishna would release him of his pretentiousness of thinking he was a great hero. So just see how everything can be made positive in Krishna. If we see in relationship with Krishna, even the negatives that we've taken, all the vrittis and samskaras that we have from the past, can all become valuable in serving Krishna. If we know the art of dovetailing everything in relationship with Krishna, everything can become, a help in our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Now I'll just read Vishwanath Chakravarti's full commentary on that verse, text number 22. He says, Vishnatana, Rukmi said, today with my sharp arrows I will remove the heroic pride of that stupid coward boy who has forcibly abducted my sister. From the viewpoint of goddess Sarasvati, the meaning is, today the intoxication of pride I have in my own prowess will be removed by the sharp arrows of the coward boy whose beautiful mind is compassionate even toward the wicked. Same, basically same thing. And the next verse is text 23.
Vikatamana kumatir ishvarasya pramanavit vatenaikena govindam tishta tishtet tatavyayat.
Boasting thus, foolish Rukmi, ignorant of the true extent of the Supreme Lord's power, approach Lord Govinda in his lone chariot and challenge him. Just stand and fight! You coward! You're not only a coward boy, you're also a coward. What's the same word? Right? English is a funny language, isn't it? It's practically the same. Stand and fight! Didn't Krishna say that somewhere? Huh? Pardon? To Arjuna? Did he say something like that? What did he say? Did he say stand and fight? Something like that. Pardon? Yes. Fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, last verse. The doubts that have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed with the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, stand and fight. So he's saying the same thing. He's repeating Krishna's Bhagavad Gita here. Just stand and fight, Krishna. This is where he got it from. See, Krishna learned from Rukmi this science. Later on, he repeated it to Arjuna. He's teaching. He's preaching to Krishna. Come on, Krishna. Stand and fight. You'll be defamed. You're leaving the battlefield. What is this? Same thing. It appears that these verses, from these verses, that though Rukmi set out with an entire military division, he personally rushed up to Lord Krishna to fight with him. It's good. It's very bold. A nice example. Very brave. Let's see if there's anything from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Little purple here. Kula Pongsana can mean... Oh, well, that's the next one, sorry. We'll leave that for tomorrow, or whatever it is, some other time. I'm just going to finish on one nice little analytical.
Analogous.
It sounds like something that lives in rivers. analogous. It's one of those analogous. Well, that's analogous. Dangerous analogous. But that just came to my mind when he was running up to Krishna like this. Just see, you weakling, look at my power. Who do you think you are? Just stand here and fight with me if you think you're a man. Coward. Yeah, he was very brave. But and there's a nice little funny little story, funny example. And you've probably heard it before. But anyway, it's good to reflect on these things. The proud dung beetle. You all know the story of the dung beetle, don't you? You know the dung beetle? Some of you have heard of the dung beetle. Very famous. Not the beetles from Liverpool. No, this is the dung beetle. This dung, they may have also, until they came to Krishna consciousness, been a little bit afflicted. But anyway, this dung beetle was one day, he happened to be crawling along, and these soldiers came along on their horses. And the horses, they stopped, and they had a little break, and then they started drinking liquor. And then he got back on the horses and drove away, rode away. Meanwhile, the horses passed stool on the ground, and some of the liquor was splashed on the floor. So the little dung beetle came up. He could smell something. What's that? He was attracted by the liquor. He went right up to the liquor and had a lick. He licked the liquor. Nice. You know what it's like. I'm sure many of you experience this regularly. That sweet taste of liquor. Yummy. And he got totally intoxicated. He didn't realize the effect of it. And he got completely intoxicated. And then he saw these dung heaps. The horses had dropped big dung heaps. So he thought, oh, look at that mountain there. Look at me. I will conquer the universe now. I will climb up. This must be the Himalaya mountains I've heard about. I will climb up these mountains and I will prove that I am the greatest. And he climbed up the horse dung to the very top. And he got to the dung, to the top of the dung heap. And he was roaring, oh, I have conquered the Himalayan mountains. Who will challenge me now? I am the greatest. Look at my power. So it just so happened shortly after that one elephant came along. And this dung drunken, intoxicated dung beetle saw the elephant, and his eyes were going like this. Oh, come on, you puny creature. Do you want to fight with me? I'll teach you a lesson or two. Come over here, you coward. And the elephant looked at him and thought, this crazy dung beetle. What's he talking about? Now, it so happens that elephants hate the smell of horse stool. There's one thing they turn away from. It's from horse's stool, the dung of a horse. So the elephant, oh my God, what a terrible smell. And it turned around and started walking away. Well, this really got the dung beetle going. He said, hey, you coward! Just see, you're afraid to even challenge me. What to speak of get beaten. You're even afraid. You can see my strength, right? He was so proud and puffed up. Come here, will you? Let me teach you a lesson. The elephant heard it. Well, I think this dung beetle does need to learn a lesson. All right then. So he just turned around without getting too close, and reared around towards the little dung beetle, and turned his backside towards the dung beetle, and thought, here you go. Enjoy this. Tremendous avalanche cascaded out of the rear end of the elephant. 50 billion tons of dung came out the back of the elephant, crushing the poor little dung beetle to shreds. And that was the end of the dung beetle. So we all call, poor dung beetle. Anyway, it's only a story. It's not, I didn't put it in my book, Animals in Krishna Consciousness. But it's just a story to illustrate becoming intoxicated with our pride, as we generally do in this world. We become overwhelmed with our God-given gifts or whatever it is, karmic acquisitions, and we challenge everybody else. Sometimes we think we can conquer the universe. I remember one time in Germany there was one lecture, and it was called Man's Conquest Over Nature. Some scientist was presenting some corpse. You know what we call them now, workshops or some seminar on man's conquest over nature. And and then the next day, when the day of the actual meeting, there was a sign up there: the seminar has been cancelled due to weather conditions beyond our control. It was like 6 foot of snow had fallen overnight or something. Nobody could get there. Electricity had gone off, everything. So we're really very, as we heard yesterday, we're not very great in comparison to the material nature. We become great when we're in relationship with Krishna. In relationship with the material nature, we remain very small. We're like a spark of fire out of the fire. And we're trying to, compete with each other over our teeny, weeny little potencies. When we come in contact with Krishna, then we can become imbued with transcendental or spiritual strength. And one can actually start to manifest qualities which are very great. They're not ours, they're due to contact or association with Krishna. Then only these good qualities can start to really develop. The whole process of devotional service is by associating with Krishna. The natural qualities which we have by nature manifest to the fullest extent, whereas they're only very dull in this material world. But because everyone else is very dull, relatively speaking, they may look a little great in comparison to others because they're also very dull. So this is Krishna consciousness, to come into contact with Krishna and gradually becoming purified and again becoming fired up, awoken, your natural dormant love of Krishna awakens, And as is said in the Bhagavad Gita, the soul is more brilliant than thousands of suns. So that is not manifesting right now, because we're disconnected, as we heard yesterday, from the power source, so therefore the energy is not manifesting, and the machinery only works to a limited extent in this world. But we become very, very proud of our tiny, tiny little power, very, very small. But we get very proud, it's a relative thing. And if we were to, for instance, come in contact with Lord Brahma, what would our so-called power be? Even in terms of the ordinary dealings in this world, there's always someone greater than ourselves, and we're always put down in due course of time, by time, of course, and also by other arrangements of karma, we get put back, because we're very, very tiny, very small. And when we come in, it's like a little baby, well, a little child rather, when the child's on its own, it's very unprotected, very, very vulnerable condition. When the child with his father, even though the child doesn't have much strength, the child feels strong because his father is there holding his hand. So when we're in the hands or protected by Krishna, then we have nothing to fear, nothing to worry about. We will feel strength, not physical strength, but spiritual strength. We will not be conquered by the material enemies of lust, greed, anger, illusion, envy, and madness. We will not be defeated by them. We will conquer over them by the mercy of Krishna. So we'll be continuing this at lunchtime, this touching the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, of how we can cross over this dangerous ocean of Kali, or the various obstacles that we have to face on our path in Krishna consciousness. So, any questions? Comments? Questions or comments?
Kul Anshana.
Pardon?
Kul Anshana, the verb.
Can you say Kul Anshana?
Corruptor of the Yadu dynasty.
Corruptor of the Yadu dynasty. That word is here in the verse?
Yes.
It is. Yes. Pardon?
Last verse.
Is it in today's or tomorrow's?
24.
24. We're leaving it for tomorrow, yeah. Tomorrow is yeah, that's tomorrow's verse. We didn't get on to that today. It's such a wonderful topic. It's so, Krishna consciousness is so wonderful. And the subject matter itself, even though there's nothing particularly philosophical necessarily about these verses, in one sense, of course, we can try to understand things in practical ways and extract various things out of it and expand upon it somewhat. But at the same time, just by hearing it alone, even if we do not have that ability or awareness, simply by hearing the topic itself purifies our minds. If one hears the pastimes of Krishna submissively, one will automatically become purified. When we hear about him killing the demons or chastising the demons, it's the sharp arrows he uses them to kill the demons. With those same sharp arrows, he kills the demons of doubt in our heart. This is how our doubts are removed, by hearing these pastimes. The anartas are removed by hearing these pastimes from Krishna book or from Bhagavatam. Anything else? You want me to smile? I having been in acting and drama for a lot, you can put on some most horrendous different concoction, what do you call it? Different facial expressions. It's hard for me to keep a neutral expression sometimes. I don't know what it looks like from that side. Occasionally I look in the mirror, and try to practice various facial expressions for drama and things. Otherwise you don't know what it looks like. We think we're very beautiful sometimes, some of us. When you look in the mirror, you start to realize that you've got a problem. You see crinkles and cracks, kinds of marks appearing on that so-called face. You become anxiety. That's not the face we want to look on. Krishna's face. His face is a reservoir of all beauty. If we look at it with the more our senses become purified, the more we will be able to, let's say, take in that beautiful picture. And more we see and hear through our ears, the more we hear the sound of Krishna's name. Through our eyes, the more we adorn the beautiful form of Krishna. With our eyes and with our senses, touch, we engage in practical service, touching Akshanopalam Parishad, Bhakta Sangam, and we touch the devotees' bodies, engage in devotional service of various kinds. With our nose, Scott and I took a bath just before coming down, but the smell of the beautiful scents offered to Krishna, the flowers, the incense, and so on. And with our tongue, that's a good one. That may be the only one for some of us. We taste the sweet nectar of prasadam. Even if the other ones are not working, at least the tongue is busy tasting prasadam. I don't want to know anything about Krishna. Sometimes people say, I don't care less about your philosophy, I don't want to know anything about Krishna, but I like your food. Your appreciation for Krishna is developing. But the more we taste, that doesn't mean to say we should simply sit down 24 hours a day and eat prasadam, honor prasadam, call it what you may. In this way I will fill myself up with impressions of Krishna. Probably did say you could, if you could just do that, that would be quite an achievement, but that's not generally the process. But through all of our senses we have to take pictures of Krishna or receive messages in relationship with Krishna, and this will gradually increase the samskara, or the impression of Krishna in our hearts, so that in all circumstances it will get stronger and stronger and stronger. And the samskaras were impressions from so many other kinds of associations in the past, will gradually get lesser and lesser and lesser and lesser and lesser. Nashta prayeshu badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utamashloki bhakti bhakti naishtiki. By regularly attending classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and rendering service to the Guru Devotees, all the dirty things in the heart are destroyed, gradually destroyed, practically to nil. They'll become almost nil. There's still a trace that will be there, of course, but it will be so small, it will be like a pock mark on the moon. It will not interfere with the flow of devotion. As long as in the world some trace may be there. But it will be very insignificant. Not to such an extent they will override our devotional samskaras or impressions. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was asked this question, and he said, it depends on your association. The more you associate on this side, the Krishna conscious side, the more you associate on the material side, that will determine your state of, let's say, consciousness or your progress in spiritual life. So we have to try to make our life 24 hours somehow or another connected to Krishna. Not that we serve Krishna one and then we serve Maya. You know, we go into Maya and then we come back. No, this will be like elephant bathing and rolling in the dust. It will take a long time. Very slow that way. Very slow. If we want to speed it up, we have to be a little more serious in trying to fill every moment we can in with impressions, or let's say Vritti's thoughts about Krishna, or hearing about Krishna, taking pictures of Krishna through our senses in various ways. And then, even if the film is developed, there will only be Krishna on the film. Be nobody else. Even if it is in a dark room, even if we have to go to hell, Narayana Paraksavi Nakutaschana Bibiti, Narakesha Svarga Apavaga Narakesha, even if you have to go to hell, Narayana Paraksavi, you still, when it's in Narayana Parayana, he's not disturbed even being in hell, because he's only got objective as Krishna. So even if we are in the dark room, what will come out will be Krishna, and not the material, because the impression is so strong. So we have to have Tivrena Bhakti Yoni, we have to have a very powerful devotional practice. If we want Kechit Kevalaya Bhakti Vasudeva Prayana, if we want the Agandan Vansikarsnina, if we want the Agas, these sinful impressions, to be removed, then our devotion has to be Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Not just like, you know, half hearted. Prabhupada said, the problem with us is we're trying to cook the rice from 200 miles away. You have to put it right on the fire. There's a long story Prabhupada tells, we won't tell it this morning. Of this, how we have to connect with the fire of Krishna consciousness. Then things will start happening. Then the rice will cook. Then our devotional service will start to blossom or mature. Okay. They did good. Who fixed the glasses yesterday? Where's our optician? Who fixed the glasses? fingers are going left and right. That's right, here he is. He fixed the glasses yesterday. Very well done. If anyone has any problems with their glasses, I recommend you to a very good, at least frame man. I'm not trying to frame you up, but he's good at fixing frames. And now we need someone who's good at fixing wallets. Here's a good wallet fixer. I will take the ingredients out first and then I'll give you the wallet to fix. But I don't know if it can be fixed. It could be fixed. I don't know what happened to the other bit. But I never liked it, particularly from the word go. It's those springy ones. It's such a hassle putting it on and it falls down when you start jumping up and down in the kirtan. I used to have one of these ones that would, what do you call it, a clip-in. And it automatically, you set the length and it doesn't have all this problem. But I couldn't find one. I bought this in Melbourne, by the way. Was it Victoria Market? Is that the name of the market?
Yes.
Victoria Market. And then I found it was cheaper at the airport. I couldn't believe it. $15 here. It was $14 out at the airport when I was leaving. It ripped off. And it's too late now. I bought my suitcase in Melbourne too. Adi Purush bought it for me. It's a good one. I can give you a tip on good suitcases. $55 and 10-year guarantee. I thought that's a pretty good deal. It's 5 years old now. It's doing well. So tomorrow some exciting pastimes are coming up. I think that probably tomorrow Hari Swari Prabhu will give class. He's going to be with us this afternoon, staying for a day or two. What Krishna arranges. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gopremanandi Adi Adi Bhagavatam ki jai.